This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast with your hosts, Kyle Borgannoni and Matthew Betts.
Welcome in, one and all. We're back. The Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Yep, I'm Kyle Borgannoni, and I'm here with Matthew. Let's win the big dog bets.
Oh, man, so many things to say about that intro and about the big dog, which I am very excited to reveal to listeners. Yeah, we're back, baby. The big dog is back. It's a tournament Kyle and I did last year for best ball on Underdog. It is a, I would say, medium stakes entry, but we had a lot of fun doing it last year. We talked about it on the show. We're gonna run it back, but I'm just wondering, Kyle, what was that when the intro came in? You know, our intro guy said your name and you said, yep, that's me. like you're so proud of it.
That's my name, that's me. I forget, because maybe listeners already realize this, but the intro man, clearly Jason, right? Jason's the one that's just killing that.
Yeah, I mean, he does so good with those. They're awesome.
They say our name, and then I say it again. But I think at this point, the only reason I do it is because people are always curious, what am I going to introduce you as?
That's true. It has become a theme. And I do like that you took a break from the, you know, attention to my wild, crazy dad life. And now we're just, dude, this is the real deal. The big dog, I mean, that was our team last year. So we haven't drafted yet. People have asked already if we have started drafting. We have not yet. But when we do, we will definitely let everyone know.
It is a worthy donation that we get to make, that we made last year. There's a couple of ways you can look at best ball, right? You can think of it as, this is an investment. I'm creating a portfolio. You know, I'm playing Dynasty. I'm playing DFS, redraft, whatever. You can think about it that way, or you can think about it as, I'm donating a lot of money that I won't see returned to me in a while. That's okay. This tournament, I feel like, forged not only this podcast, but we had so many listeners, especially in the Discord. We had people reach out. Are you going to have a big dog team? And yes, we will. Betts and I are going to get that started on Underdog. You, Jason, and I are wrapping up our Great Dane team. So we still, that draft is so slow. That's the slowest of slow drafts. But we're still working through that. And we hope that this best ball season has been super fun. I mean, so many screenshots of people saying, what should I do here? And me saying, I don't know. Look at our ranks. Look at the primer. Listen back to all the shows. We've got a stupid amount of content and a stupid amount that we're going to get into over the next coming weeks leading up to week one. I know you're putting together some preseason thoughts right now. You just max entered a preseason tournament, and I wrote on Twitter that I'm reporting you to HR for misusing company funds, because, right, the company funds everything, all of our DFS endeavors.
Right, and the wagers, you know, and their tax write-offs if we get it wrong. So, yeah, we're living basically free life at this point.
Can we just be as clear as possible with people? Because I've gotten that question a lot. Like, the footballers do not give us, I mean, they give us money as like our jobs, we get paid, but they do not fund. Someone's asking, oh, do you guys get a gambling budget every year? That would be awesome.
Maybe we should work that into the next next year's deal. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, if we can prove that there's a good steady return, I feel like we can on player props, which is something we've had a lot more conversations behind the scene of, just season-long props and then week-to-week. So we've got some stuff in the works. If you're interested in more player props, please tell us. Please let us know on Twitter. You know what? Tag the guys. Tag Andy, Mike, and Jason. Say, hey, I need player props in my life, and you're probably going to get some more content from that. We're glad you're with us. We're going to talk today about GPP Life, the guaranteed prize pool, those big money winners, and how to best approach the tournaments. From a mindset perspective, we're going to give you some data. And then next week, we're going to have a full conversation on roster percentage and contest selection, which I feel like I would say are the two things we want to make sure people understand when they're playing tournaments. How to play the right ones, not just flushing your money down the toilet, but also how to make sure you understand what the field is doing. Please, please go online and look at the wonderful reviews that we have listed. We're going to read one of those because last week you and I said that we would, give one listener some swag. So I'm going to let you read this, Betts. I have this posted in the doc. And this was probably one of our favorite reviews. Thank you so much for those of you that gave 5-star reviews. But why don't you read this one from Aminar?
I'm so happy that you're the one that read that name because I'm sitting here while you're talking and I'm reading this and I'm saying I have no idea how to read that person's username. So yes, how Kyle just said it is what I would go with. But the title is an absolute masterpiece. It is 5 stars. This person says, what happens when you mix the philosophy of Aristotle, the intelligence of Einstein, the creativeness of Michelangelo, and the inventiveness of Edison, but you make it all about betting on football? Well, obviously, the Fantasy Footballers DFS podcast honestly have made quite a bit of money from listening to this, and all while they keep it super fun and entertaining. It is a must listen for football fans. So thank you for that review. That was awesome.
No, thank you so much. And hopefully we've given you some content over the summer and end of the season that's valuable, that we're approachable people. Like, yes, you know, we work for the Fantasy Footballers. Andy, Mike, and Jason are a big deal football space, but they're also approachable people, and we try to do that too. So make sure you message us. Betts is at the Fantasy PT on Twitter. I'm at Kyle_Borg. I have a quick question for us. We did this segment on the Thursday main show, but really, you and I have been talking about it behind the scenes a lot about some best ball risers and camp hype. Last week on this show, I mentioned the great Marquez Callaway, who we'll talk about again this week, because he's a great week one study case for tournaments. But I'm going to give you a couple of names, and I want to just hear you quickly respond, Betts, because players rise at this part of the season because of what we see in camp and because of what happens in preseason, right? Callaway had 2 touchdowns in week 3 of preseason, most popular player in DFS. We're getting some of these players at a spot now where you have to make a conscious decision. Let's talk about Romeo Doubs first, because in the office back in February, we talked about Romeo Doubs in the Dynasty Pass as like, who is this guy? We love his name. We looked at his tape from Nevada. He had some good production the last 2 years. And then he gets drafted later in the 4th round after Christian Watson, who they took in the 2nd round. And he was a great, I would say, last round pick for a while. In June, he was the wide receiver 94. Now, you have to get him in the 12th or 13th round in ADP. How are you handling this? Or is it one of those things where it's like, hey, you're drafting against teams that picked him in the 18th round?
Actually, I was just going to say that. I did a best ball mania this morning, and he went in the 11th round. And so, like, there's a chance that what I have on the dock right now, Kyle, is inaccurate by tomorrow when the podcast comes out. Like, his name is rising so fast. And I just can't invest more into a player who, like you said, in round 18 was a great dart throw. And we know the opportunity cost is so low in round 18 that, you know, if it doesn't work, it's not really going to sink your team. It's okay. If you take him in round 11 or 12 or 13 and he doesn't work out, like, that's a big deal for your best ball squad. And like you mentioned, be cognizant of, I think, not only the contest that you're playing in. So if it's the Puppy 3, you know, that just came out not that long ago, there's a chance you're not playing that against that many round 18 Romeo Doubs teams. If you're playing a best ball mania, there are a lot of teams with Doubs in 17 or 18th round. Their rosters are much stronger than yours if you take him in round 11, unless he is awesome and outperforms even that ADP, which I feel like we just need to pump the brakes a little bit. I mean, we were giving Christian Watson such a hard time for being a rookie playing with Aaron Rodgers. Well, the Green Bay Packers took him in round 2 and they took Doubs in round 4. Like, they're telling us that they think Christian Watson is probably a better prospect. And so I know the camp hype is fun It's exciting. We've been kind of on him since February, so like I really do hope it works out. But I messaged you in Slack the other day. I said, I think Romeo Doubs is the worst best ball pick right now based off this ADP rise, and I can't invest anymore.
Yeah, it's the price. Right now, Christian Watson's going as wide receiver 63 at 138th overall, and Doubs, wide receiver 71, 151st overall. Do you think he will eventually pass him? Like, will Doubs pass Watson?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. You still have Sammy Watkins, Randall Cobb, Amari Rodgers if you want to take another dart throw. In a tournament, that's what I want to do. I want to take what everyone else is doing. He's moved from round 18 all the way up to, what'd you say, round 11? It's like, I want to instead gain some leverage because, yeah, around 11 or round 10, round 9, if he ends up there like Marcus Callaway, that Romeo Doubs is not going to be a league winning because there's so many other players in that range. All right, I want to give you a couple more. We'll move a little quicker on these. Isaiah Pacheco was basically undrafted, seventh round rookie. A lot of talk about him looking excellent. You know, Ronald Jones on the roster bubble. He's now, you kind of have to get him in round 16. Like, it's no longer free. And there's a conversation between him and McKinnon. They're going around the same spot, but he just passed McKinnon. So thoughts on Pacheco?
Yeah, so this one's tough because, and we're going to talk about this actually with Marquez Callaway, but, you know, running back is so replaceable that you don't have to be as talented for it to work out for you, so to speak. But if you're playing wide receiver in the NFL, like, you don't get targets if you're not good at the game. And we saw that with Marquez Callaway last year. And so I think investing in Pacheco while he's still in like 16th, 17th round is okay, because I can see it working out that he gives you some usable weeks and, you know, he does learn how to roll and CEH doesn't perform as we've seen. I can understand that. But let's be real, like, this is a super late round pick. You know, this is still a team that wants to throw the ball a ton. They're not going to hand it off 20 times to Pacheco in the best case scenario, in my opinion. So if he gets to like round 15, round 14, I'm out. I think I'm okay though with where he is right now.
Yeah, the draft capital, you go back to the list, like seventh round rookies don't do much. And there's Miles Gaskin from 2 years ago. There's Chris Carson years before that. It's just not a high hit rate. So if he keeps going higher.
Real quick, Kyle, though, on that same point, is this good for CEH?
Oh, it's great. Like I've been drafting CEH more and more over the last 2 weeks.
I was going to say, because I've seen him fall quite a bit, and it feels like this is a good time if you're out on CEH to maybe think about getting some exposure just in case he does have the role, because, yeah, like you said, he's competing now with a seventh round pick for touches as a lead back and a great offense.
I just want to give people a picture of the running backs that are going in that round around CEH. Because this, I find that I am, if I have a hero RB build, like I have a CMC or somebody else, and then I'm waiting, or if I'm looking for a third running back, like, these are the guys I want as my RB3. CEH, Chase Edmonds, who you and I are crazy about, Ramondre Stevenson, who's been your boy, James Cook. Like, those are the guys that I have a ton of exposure to, and they're going in a spot where I think I'm not taking your boy TJ Hawkinson. I saw you tweet about him. Like, who's taking TJ Hawkinson?
How has his ADP not changed all summer? Every draft I do, he goes after his ADP, but it hasn't changed. I don't understand you people. Stop doing that.
Yes, I've looked at him. I've been in that spot. I'm like, I'm taking a running back here over and over. I mean, we're taking quarterbacks in this range, right? The Kirk Cousins types, Dak. Like, so I love this spot. I think it's a good point. You take the hype from other players and you see how it affects the rest of the groupings. All right, two more names just really quickly. Julio Jones and Isaiah McKenzie. I'll say this about McKenzie. He's risen above Jamison Crowder, and there's no guarantee that he's the slot guy. So I had a lot of Crowder early, and then I've gotten some McKenzie, you know, a month or two ago. But I've kind of been waiting to see how this situation, you know, stands out. But Crowder is somebody that now, like, I got in the 17th round in a league.
Yeah, he's been left for dead with the news of, you know, McKenzie coming out early in camp when Crowder wasn't even really out there. So, right. You know, with both these guys healthy, we'll find out, I think, more over the next 2-3 weeks what they really want to do. There's also a chance that, like, you know, it's Steph Diggs and Gabe Davis, and then these two just rotate a bunch, and then they both kind of eat into each other. So I would not be chasing Isaiah McKenzie at this point.
And last one, we said Julio Jones was going as wide receiver 85, like almost undrafted, right? Julio Jones, one of the greats. Now he's going as wide receiver 55. I got it.
I love
this
it.
Week.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. What are your thoughts on Julio? Because, like, so the most recent news too with Russell Gage picking up a hamstring injury, I think gives some life to Julio's early season outlook, especially Chris Godwin, but I'm coming around to Chris Godwin's recovery and the reality that he'll probably be very productive for us in fantasy down the stretch, thinking like late October through the end of the year. And so again, if people have round 18 Julio and you're chasing and trying to compete with those teams with a round 10 Julio share, again, at 33, changing teams yet again, I know it's Tom Brady, but I would find it hard to believe that that is a solid, good, sound, you know, idea. It could work out, but in theory, I think the play is incorrect to try to chase it.
No, I'm with you. I'm going to say something out loud that I've been scared to say is over the last month, I've been fading Bucks. Just like, I'm not drafting a tight end. I think they're not going to be important at all. I haven't been picking up Brady. Evans has fallen a little bit in my mind as like from being an alpha, what we thought he was going to be. Godwin's in this ambiguous spot. Gage is hurt and Julio Jones is too high. And I'm going to say it. I've drafted Leonard Fournette maybe once.
All right.
I said it. I'm fading Tom Brady again. I'm trying.
It's Kyle against the GOAT and the betting markets who, you know, the Bucks are still up there in terms of winning the NFC. So yeah, you do you, Kyle, whatever you like to light your money on fire. I'll tell you this. We are not going to be fading the Bucks in the big dog. How about that?
I'm fine with that. Okay. So listen, we can talk, we can like the Buccaneers and we can like a team for fantasy as a whole, but I care about them returning their value. And at this point, I don't love where they're going. Like, I think a lot of them are priced near their ceilings. And we talked about this last year with the Cowboys, right? We loved the Cowboys. We had the bet for them to lead the league in scoring. None of their top players actually return value in terms of their ADP. So I think it's possible that you look at the Cowboys, I mean, other than Dalton Schultz, who was super late as a dart throw, you wouldn't have liked what you did with the Cowboys last year for any of those guys. And so I'm not saying it's one-to-one that's going to happen, but I just want to give an outcome. And I'm really scared because I have faded Leonard Fournette so much.
I think that's an okay fade, in my opinion. I'm still in on Tom Brady at QB10. I mean, I just think, you know, things have gone a little south recently. But think about this. Like, Mike Evans healthy, Chris Godwin healthy, Julio providing enough usable weeks for Brady. I don't think Julio himself will be great, but, like, for Brady, it can be good. You know, Russell Gage comes into his own down the stretch. I just think Tom Brady can still outperform ADP, but I hear you on the price for the other guys.
For sure. All right, we're going to head into our segment and talk about some GPPs.
You down with GPP?
Dude, you remember that drop?
It's been forever since I've heard that drop, but now I immediately want to go enter a DFS contest.
Do it. Do it. I don't even care that we're on the air, that you and I are recording right now. Just do it just for the sake of the people to know that you're that committed. Do like a quarter entry or something.
I'm in.
All right, so we're talking about guaranteed prize pools today. We're talking about tournaments and how to approach them best. But really, this is a conversation about game theory. With Cash, last week, you and I talked about optimal lineups, about point projections, and what we're looking for in Cash, that you actually have room for error. If you want to get good at GPPs, you need to embrace some risk and realize that this life is tough. Like, playing this way in DFS, you are guaranteed to lose way more than you win. So talk to people real quick about that mindset before we get into specifics.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at GPPs, you know, like you said, the reality is you're going to lose. And if you aren't able to accept that, you know, you're going to have losing weeks, but hopefully have a couple of really, really good weeks to kind of still end up profitable on the year, is sometimes scary for people. And with Cash, you know, you're looking at that long-term mindset. You're trying to be able to absorb a couple body blows throughout the year. If, you know, week 4, week 8, week 9, like, you kind of have some bad weeks, but yeah, in Cash, you're still profitable most weeks. Like, you're going to have a really good season. In GPPs, like, you could play really good, super smart lineups, correlated, all those things, enter the right contests, and you just don't find the right side of variance, and you lose 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks in a row. That's a lot of losing and tough to do for some people, especially really casual people. But you have to understand, in GPPs, we're chasing the top end outcomes. So, you know, it's kind of crazy, but like, I remember in the playoffs last year, I had that insane week with the Gabe Davis stuff in the playoffs and all that sort of thing. I had like 4 or 5 really horrible GPP weeks to the point where I was like, I don't even know if I should be playing in this GPP. And then you have a high end outcome and it kind of really helps, you know, stabilize everything for you and really ends up profitable. So just understand, you know, we're playing for 1 week. You're embracing variance. You're understanding you're going to lose sometimes, but hopefully you can get those high end payouts to make it worth it in the end.
Last week, we talked about head-to-heads and double-ups, and your opponents are being better than 50% of the field or one other person. Here, we have to adjust our approach because of who we're playing with. And next week, we'll go more into roster percentages and kind of how to turn the lever and say, okay, if this player is going here, I want to be able to go the opposite direction, use leverage and everything else. But this is like playing Battleship, if you ever played that board game, or shout out to one of my favorite games as a kid called Stratego. Did you ever play that, Betts?
I don't think I've even heard of that.
Stratego is like one of those, you know, war games like Risk or whatever, but you couldn't see what your opponent was doing. They set up all of their guys, you set up all of yours, and you had no idea where the flag was. It was a capture the flag kind of game. And at the end of the day, like, I had no idea where my opponent was placing things. I had a rough idea because they're moving certain players. But at the end of the day, I needed to be able to figure out what they were doing blindly. And there's some factors that we can do that in GPP. The field size, like when you're dealing with a field size of, you know, 1 to 2,000 people, you can figure that out. That's a GPP. But when you're going these massive ones, right? Like we're talking, you know, 300,000 people or a million people, whatever is week one. The more players involved probably means there's more skills, more variables, and the goal isn't about not making mistakes. Would you say that that's how we approach cash?
I think so, yeah. And I think when you talk about cash, like we said, you can absorb a mistake or two in your lineup. Your perfect example from week one last year was the Raheem Mostert injury. If that happens in a GPP, like, you know, you're done, but you can embrace it in cash, and you're really trying to just give yourself a high floor outcome. Like you said, in GPPs, you're not worried about being wrong because when you're right, your payout is so much more and it's okay to be wrong, you know, sometimes because you understand that there is going to be those losing weeks, but when it hits, it hits.
And that's what we care about. We care about volatility. We talked about that earlier this summer with DeSorbo and from a best ball context. We'll talk about that from a DFS, but the first thing we want to talk about is how you get to research, because I think when I first started playing DFS, I approach tournaments as, okay, I know who kind of the good plays are this week, like the high volume running backs, but I have this feeling about this player and I hope no one else does. And I can't tell you how many messages you and I get from someone saying, is this person a good play in a tournament? And every single time you and I say, sure, why not? Like it could go off.
For it.
I mean, like I get so many messages from people like, could this fourth string receiver be the guy this week? And it's like, I mean, he could. Like, my story I've shared before is like, I won a tournament early on with JJ Nelson, who is a backup receiver for the Cardinals, super fast, but like 150 pounds. And I think he scored 2 touchdowns. And I thought, I'm the smartest person alive. I played JJ Nelson and no one else did. And it's hard to replicate that same thing, that same feeling. So you can't just go off a feeling on this, right?
I mean, in theory, you could. It's not recommended. You know, and what really we're coming down to with this is like, we want you guys, when you're entering these contests, to have a process. So, you know, like if you're listening to this show, you're plugged in, we have 2 per week, one on Tuesday where we preview the slate and then, you know, talk about it from a high level context. And then on Thursdays, you know, Kyle and I sit down and talk, and on Fridays it comes out and we basically get into the plays that we like and the games we like and that sort of thing. So you have a process. So I think you have to understand that it's okay to have a general idea of like, okay, I love this game. The field is on the wide receiver one. Like, I kind of feel like the wide receiver two is undervalued. That sort of thing is okay. But just kind of blindly being like, yeah, this feels like a, I don't know, name a random wide receiver, a Jamal Agnew week. That just doesn't necessarily have the same effect as a process does.
There was one time when it was the Jamal Agnew week. And you'll never let
buddy.
People, you'll talk about that till you die.
That was the highlight of the show, let's be honest.
So I think one of the best ways to do research is, you know, one, use the DFS pass because we have a first look article that tells you on Tuesday, here's the salary standouts. You go through the Vegas totals. I mean, you walk through the week and I feel like we try to give people a slow progression of here's how you can look at this slate. Here's some of our picks, our GP picks. We have our best plays. We have all of those. But then what happens is people end up going on Twitter and they see someone named Hot Take McGee who says, imagine fading Davante Adams. Or they say something like, Jamal Agnew in a GPP, send tweet. And then it's like, okay, well, what do they know about Davante Adams, Jamal Agnew? So Twitter's a dangerous place for GPPs.
It is, yeah. And, you know, there's some stuff out there that is really valuable on Twitter. I love Twitter for the, not only the experience of it, it's funny and you see stuff like that, but like in football season, if you are a serious player, like there is information out there that you can get from Twitter. So it's not like we're saying don't use it. But when there's people saying silly things like Kyle just mentioned with the Jamal Agnew stuff or imagine fading this player, it's like, you know, maybe they're right, but there's a good chance they're wrong. And if you don't buy into these silly narratives, you can stay on track with your process throughout the week. And what I really want to remind people is like, you had the whole week to prepare for this stuff. Don't just flip your mind on Sunday morning because someone on Twitter randomly said something about it.
Yes, and I've been guilty of that so many times. Stone cold takes and locks, they don't help us in tournaments at all. Like, we do that in cash. We're saying, I'm locking in Jonathan Taylor. I'm locking in this player. But we care more about variance, and so I'm very open to the fact that I can be wrong in GPPs. Like, it makes sense because of the outcomes. But let's talk about Marquez Callaway last year. Not just from like, ha, 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 look who fell for that, like, but the process part of it and the main takeaway. So week three, we mentioned he had that huge game, 2 touchdowns, and it was on Monday night, right? Like, everybody saw this game?
Yep, Monday Night Football.
So we talked about his ADP rising. We talked about that from a best ball perspective. But because he was priced so early before this, like, he was super cheap. What was it, 3,400?
Yep, 3,400 on DK. He was like the lock of the week if you were playing a wide receiver that you needed to save salary. Because like we talked about on our last show, where were the early salary standouts. You know, I mentioned it with Kadarius Toney. I was like, how is this possible? And there will be a wide receiver, maybe Romeo Doubs, I don't know, that we look at in week one and people will say, how is this possible? We have to play him. And Marquez Callaway is the perfect example of when it goes south.
Yeah, and you know, we can poke holes in Callaway as a player, like four-year college player. He didn't have high-end production, undrafted. There's just so many things. Like, he didn't really, there was nothing he had done except for that preseason game and I guess how he stood out in camp. You know, who were the wide receivers that he was competing with, though? Like, of course he's going to stand out. Like, he was competing with
Traquan Smith,
who should not be in the league. I have no idea how they resigned him. Like, why did they do that?
I wish I knew.
I have no idea why they like him still. So what would you say is the big take-home point for this in terms of when you're approaching a tournament and you have players that gain steam, what should you do?
Yeah, I just think of the field as overconfident in a projection. You know, every site uses them, we use them. But if it's a really fragile projection, meaning we haven't seen this player do this before, you know, they're cheap and so they're going to fit a lot of builds and the roster percentage gets out of hand. Like Marquez Callaway in week one was 25% in most contests. That's just ridiculous in hindsight, obviously. But even the process felt so wrong to play a player like that because he's cheap. You have to earn targets in the NFL to be a wide receiver. That's good. And we have never seen that. So the field just assumed he would do it in week one. And it was clearly a bad play. I think the take home is just that the field is overconfident in a fragile player. Do not be afraid to fade that player.
The craziest part was that week one game last year was Saints and Packers. The Saints won 38-3, if you remember correctly, and Callaway had one catch. Like,
everyone
would have looked at that game and looked at the box score like, oh man, Marquez Callaway must have gone off. Like, no, Jameis Winston throws 5 touchdowns and it doesn't matter at all because that's how GPPs work. Before we talk about our next point, let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, next I want to talk about player projections, because in cash lineups, we care so much about not trading points of projection. So if you're saying, I like Nick Chubb and he's projected for 14 whatever points in our projections, and you're saying, you know what, instead of Nick Chubb, I'm going to drop down a little bit because I like this build a little bit more, but you end up trading 2.5 points, that really does matter. This is a different conversation completely when we talk about tournaments, because top projected players aren't always the best plays. They're not always the plays that we want to go towards. So with median projections, that's what you see across the board. It's just like, hey, this is the median outcome for this player. I mentioned 14 points for Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb can have games where he goes for 100, which gives us the 3-point bonus on DraftKings, and he goes for 2 touchdowns. Like, Nick Chubb is a perfect example of a player that when he's not popular, I'm going to go for him because I know what his ceiling outcome is. I also know that his floor is pretty low because he doesn't catch any passes. And on a site like DK, people don't like him. So I like to think about players from a median standpoint, but more of what the field thinks they're going to do. Like, 14 points is not going to help you from an RB selection to win a tournament.
Right. And that's really what it's all about, is just like with cash last week, we care about the floor so, so much more than we do in GPPs. Like, I would literally rather finish dead last, but have a really solid lineup constructed around good correlation and, you know, high ceiling plays, and chase the ceiling and be wrong, you know, 6 weeks in a row. But then when I'm right, like, it hits in such a huge way. So yeah, the projections are helpful, I think, to guide you in the right direction. But think about these players and their archetype. Like, have we seen huge games from this player before? Yes. Is this a matchup that's probably a little underrated? Yes. Is the field off of him? Yeah, okay, that's a great play. Like, let's go for it. So yeah, I think that projections are helpful. They are not the answer, though, to this this equation.
We also have to think about players in terms of, we talk a lot about, did they 4X their salary? Did they 3X their salary? So I have some FanDuel numbers in front of me right now. Like, Jonathan Taylor, he's the highest priced running back. I mean, it makes sense, right? In week one at over $10,000. And FanDuel uses a little different. It's half point scoring. But if Jonathan Taylor in a GPP doesn't score at least 30 points, I'm going to be disappointed, right?
Yeah, we're usually looking for a minimum of 3X their salary.
Yeah, and Christian McCaffrey's only 9,500 on that site. So I will be playing a lot of Christian McCaffrey on every site, but especially on FanDuel. So we have to think about players as a double-edged sword for GPPs. Of course, Jonathan Taylor is going to have the highest median projection probably of running backs. He plays at Houston, probably can destroy that defense. It's not, I mean, it's very easy to look at that. But we look at players and don't just say, you know, what do we think they can do, but say, is Jonathan Taylor, is he a good play or is he a not a good play in this type of lineup, right? So another way to gain leverage on that is to say, okay, instead of playing Jonathan Taylor in a GPP, what if they get there, the Colts, they score 30 points, but the way that they get there is Matt Ryan, Pity City, and actually Nyheim Hines, and you bring him back with a Brandon Cooks. So just, you're thinking about constructing a roster with a player and using it all the different ways that you can construct it. So creating leverage is really key. We talk about that a lot. Think about the running back on the other side, right? So I don't know. Do you want to go into Rex Burkhead, Marlon Mack world, Damien Pierce?
It doesn't sound great. Let's be real.
It sounds terrible. Another way to do that is to look at the same price point, right? So instead of going there, you can drop down a little bit. Derrick Henry's at 9,700. Christian McCaffrey, 9,500. Austin Eckler, 9,400. So you're saying if Jonathan Taylor doesn't hit a ceiling outcome, people probably aren't paying up for two running backs. I can use another player as a leverage point. But next, I want to talk about matchups. This is something that I think you and I have grown on, and it's something our buddy Matt DeSorbo put out an article a couple years ago. But with matchups, how much matters and how much is just totally psychological based on that green and red number? We'll talk through the main positions, but like, would you say that like most of this is just dealing with, this is what the psychology says when I see 32 red?
I mean, it doesn't feel good to just log in and
whatever.
and see, yeah, whatever. If it's red, it doesn't feel good. Like, you want to see these matchups and you're like, oh, sweet. Like, you know, last year it was my running back is going up against the Jets. This feels just so right to hit the button on this player. But, you know, if you had someone else, let's say like one of the elite running backs, Dalvin Cook, in a tough matchup, you're worried about it because it doesn't feel as right. You know, the math doesn't add up that you should be playing against bad defenses. But a lot of the research, especially for elite players, tends to show that, like, matchups, it's not that they don't matter because, of course, everything is in context, but they aren't as important as I think the field makes them out to be. And so what I really want this section to focus on is just, you know, Davante Adams can beat anyone any day. Like, I'm not going to not play Davante Adams if he's 3% in a high total game and, you know, it's against a good cornerback, so to speak. You know, so those sort of things just, I think, are noisy. And I think that we should consider matchups but not make them the end-all be-all of our lineup.
When we write our columns, we always mention, you know, here's what they've given up fantasy points. It's a metric that you can use, but it's not always telling, especially, I would say, for wide receivers. You just mentioned Adams. Great wide receivers can go off against anyone. Great running backs can't be able to overcome. Like, Jonathan Taylor's biggest game last year was against the Bills, and nobody was playing him at all. So that was one of those leverage points that everyone be like, oh, let's... Jonathan Taylor's too expensive. There's no way he's going to pay off at his cost. He's not good. You can use that as leverage because top five running backs are the most resilient to defensive matchups from what we've seen. But I think cornerback and wide receiver matchups is also something that's really hard to peg. I've written this article for years, and I always tread lightly when I talk about certain matchups because of how wide receivers move all over the field. Like, you're not going to see Jalen Ramsey the entire time. You know, there are certain corners that do shadow. But don't be scared off by a matchup just because there's a big-name cornerback on the other side. I would say that's one of the things I want to use the most for GPPs.
For sure. And I think about the way the NFL is evolving, right? Like, Cooper Kupp was all over the field different places last year. There was no cornerback that was just going to be on him the entire game because of how good the scheme was. We're excited about what that can mean for Justin Jefferson. Davante Adams in Green Bay was all over the place. You know, the NFL is just, they're getting better. Tyreek Hill, same thing, out of the backfield, in the slot, on the perimeter. The specific cornerback matchups I think are okay to talk about, but man, they are the last decision point I would use if I'm deciding whether or not to play a wide receiver, and specifically the matchup too. Like, one example from last year that I looked back through some of the Fantasy Labs data, and, you know, Mike Evans is a guy that we know can go off for two touchdowns, even three touchdowns, but in week 7 last year, the Bucks were playing the Bears, and I know the Bears are kind of the laughingstock of the league right now, but they had a really good, quote unquote, good pass defense last year. On paper, at least, they were second best in terms of fantasy points given up to both the quarterback and the wide receiver entering that week. And so if you look at, you know, DraftKings or wherever, like, and you see the red, you're going to see that the Bears are a bad matchup. But dude, it's Tom Brady and Mike Evans. Like, it doesn't matter. The dude went off for three touchdowns. He was about 7-10% rostered, depending on where you're at in different contests. And so take home here is, like, elite players can overcome bad matchups, and I wouldn't necessarily be scared to play them in those bad matchups, especially if the field is off of them.
There's just so many players that, as we've looked at week one, we looked at the salaries, that the field is going to overvalue because of that number. So we mentioned on DraftKings, Michael Pittman Jr. We built this city. Man,
yeah, baby.
I've been waiting to use that drop on the show. He's stuck with the Texans matchup that says they were 25th in the league. So it's green. It shows up. The Texans were better than you think last year against the pass, but there's a deeper story where they were one of the worst against the run. So teams just said, screw it, we don't have to pass as much. So the volume doesn't look as much. So we talk a lot about DVOA metrics, which kind of take out a lot of the noise. We'll talk more about that. I think we'll have an entire show, you know, where we talk about week one prices, and maybe when we talk about the salaries, we'll talk about matchups and which matchups we would like to fade. So that, I think it's important for people, look at the matchups, say we like it, but also realize there's some risk. All right, let's talk about single entry, because that kind of gets lost because the prize pools aren't as big sometimes, and it can be not as fun from just firing darts at tons of different lineups. So single entry is more your thing. I think, Betts, you're better at this than myself. So how are you approaching single entries different from ones that you can multi-entry?
Yeah, the biggest, you know, decision point really is that you don't have multiple lineups to fall back on and being like, okay, like I'm scared to fade Derrick Henry this week, but I'm going to play one lineup just in case. Like there is no such thing as that in a single entry. And I actually like playing these, and I prefer to play small field single entry because I think it allows you to really understand what your opponents are going to do. Whereas in these large field tournaments, I mean, it's like the Wild Wild West out there, Kyle. Like anything can happen. But if you're playing in, let's say, like a 200 man field, you know, and there's 3 to 5 running backs that project super well, they're already really good quote unquote cash plays, like they're going to be in a lot of your opponent's lineups. That's how people build these lineups in these single entry types of situations. So I kind of like knowing that information because I think it helps you make a decision. How strong are those plays, whether it's running back or wide receiver? And if you know that they're going to be 25% in cash, like in this tournament, they're probably going to be 30%. So how good of a fade is that? It gets a lot easier to decide those things. And so I think in single entry, it just allows you to make more of a stand against your opponents. And because you don't have to be perfect, again, you can absorb a little bit of error with your lineup and still end up really profitable. So I like the single entry and I prefer the small field.
Yeah. And I think with correlation, when you think about these single entry, probably smaller field, you're just trying to get a couple of simple things right compared to the rest of the group. So maybe somebody else does have Michael Pittman, but they didn't pair him with the wide receiver on the other side. Like they, instead of, you know, Brandon Cooks, they did Nico Collins or whatever it is for the Texans. Like you're trying to make a couple of simple, smart plays, not over the moon, and you're trying to correlate your players. So, you know, with your quarterbacks, you're saying the wide receiver one is somebody I want on this team, wide receiver two, which we love. You and I talk all the time about wide receiver twos for teams being lower rostered and giving you the type of leverage that you need, and also not forgetting about tight ends. So I'm not saying Mo Alie-Cox is a great choice in week one, but you know, let's say he catches the touchdown, you gain leverage, whatever it is, over those Michael Pittman lineups. That's what happens. So any quick thoughts about correlating in those fields and how to bring it back on the other side?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely something you should be doing because, like you said, in smaller fields, you're just trying to get a couple things right, and that can really elevate you to the top. And so what we mean by getting it right is if you have a profitable stack that week, whether it's quarterback and one wide receiver or quarterback and two wide receivers or the tight end or whatever it is, like if that hits, there's a really good chance that the opponents are also having a decent game because we know the interaction between offenses is super predictable when an offense rolls, typically, unless the other team is just terrible. The other offense can keep up with production. And so in the example, like you said, if you get that right, if you get that game stack right, you go, you know, Matt Ryan, Michael Pittman, and you do have Brandon Cooks, it's a good way to just make sure you got that right. And your other parts of your lineup don't have to be perfect in smaller field single entry tournaments. I went back and looked at Fantasy Labs data to find what the correlation coefficient was for certain stacking situations. So when you stack your quarterback, it makes sense. The wide receiver one has the highest predictability of correlation. It's 0.57. But what we were just talking about a second ago, Kyle, is that wide receiver two, the field tends to underutilize wide receiver twos, meaning that they over, you know, value who the quote unquote one is in the target share. But the wide receiver two has a 0.51 correlation. It's not that much different than the wide receiver one. So don't be afraid to, like we were saying kind of before, if the field is on the Matt Stafford to Cooper Kupp, you know, stack, which last year worked every time, but if it doesn't work every time and you go with Allen Robinson, like you're probably still having a really solid lineup out there, but getting different from the field.
We will produce charts for you that actually show correlation just historically. So we have data going all the way back to 2014 that shows, hey, here's the stronger correlation. Now in game, in one single game, like when you and I talk about showdown, we'll do a show on that, but it's like, there's going to be games where the wide receiver three goes off or the running back two goes off. Like, but over the course of the season, we would say that you can find out what the strongest correlations are and which ones to fade and even just like which players correlate within their own team. So I was looking at this for our Great Dane team that you and Jason are. I found that over the course of the last year and a half, CeeDee Lamb and Ezekiel Elliott have major positive correlation bets. So for that team, we have those two players. I'm feeling pretty good.
That makes me very happy because that's going to be the entire offense for the first, what, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. So I'm happy that you did that research and that it proved your priors.
And just for the people out there, yes, we have Zeke. Yes, we have CeeDee Lamb. And no, we did not get Dak.
Whoopsies.
That league is so
we're getting
hard.
Sniped left and right.
We're actually on the turn, so it's even harder, I feel like, to anticipate. Even when we look at ADP, like, oh, this guy will be there in two rounds. It's like, no, not going to be there at all. let's talk about one more point here about large field strategy. And I just think of the number of just dead bodies across the field of lineups that are just completely done at the very beginning. Because, one, most people aren't correlating. Two, there's a ton of duplicated lineups. So you're not getting any leverage on anyone else. And three, these are a lot of lineups are just built for like cash. So at the end of the day, I know that if you're listening to this podcast and you get to read our articles, you already have a big leg up on the field that's just completely dead. And we have smart people that listen to us.
Oh, for sure, dude. I mean, some people are better at DFS than us, truthfully, that are listening to us. So yeah, and I love being able to hop in Discord every now and then and like talk through some of this stuff. But yeah, large field strategy, like it's, we talked about this kind of with your goals of DFS, right? Like people will see on TV the big, huge, you know, fake checks for $10,000 or whatever it is. And they're like, I want to win that. So like, let me just log in and see what's going on here. And you'll get casual people just blindly entering these random contests that are like 150s, but they're entering like two lineups. Like it's probably not a good idea. It's probably not super smart lineups. So yes, I do think in large field, like, you know, we live in a bubble in terms of like this world of DFS and Twitter and whatever. Like there's a lot of people in playing in these large field tournaments that truthfully don't know what they're doing.
And for those of you out there, you're like, I'm feeling intimidated by this. We have a league on DraftKings for our podcast, and that thing fills up so fast, but it gives you a chance to play in smaller field and then be able to translate that to bigger. So we're trying to expand our field this year where instead of like 300 person tournaments, like we'd love to get to 500, even 1,000 each week. And it was so great, that community last year of people getting that experience of playing, like, you know, me getting to come on this podcast and say, Betts, I won again against our listeners.
Yep, that was fun to hear every week because I did not win. So that was fun.
The cash lineups in that are hilarious because it's like we're telling people all week who we like in cash, and then they're going to use it against us.
Should we this year just give really bad advice and then people will play them and then we'll get a leg up?
Yeah, we'll have like our real takes on the dark web that like people will be like, we have to really search. You have to really find what we really think about players. Yeah, so my quick thought about large field, we'll talk about that a ton next week when we talk about roster percentages. I think that's going to be the linchpin of like how we connect the theory part to how do you actually react with tournaments. But you're really thinking about what other people are thinking. I know that's really hard to do, but you're dealing with a group of people who know fantasy football, but also are somewhat predictable. You and I could probably right now go in for week one and look at who are going to be the most popular running backs based on historical data. And we have that available. Our roster percentage report says, okay, here's the running backs based on price points that people usually go for. Like it's easier for us to be able to do that. I think what I'm really interested in, and we're going to look at this week one slate right now, is finding value stacks in games that aren't as popular. So when we preview what the three or four most popular games, we usually do that each week based on the Vegas totals. We talk about those games from a stacking perspective, but it's really finding value stacks in other games that could go off or maybe are a little bit below. Our research in the past has shown that games that are kind of in that 46 to 48 range, maybe even 49, 50 is the magical number for people in the totals. But those games in like 47, they can go off and they're usually under-rostered.
Yep, that was a really, I think, big takeaway from our research last year. And that was one that I definitely want to carry over this year is just the field. And maybe this, I think this is a good strategy. I'm not saying this is bad to do, but the field will log in and see like, okay, what's the highest game total this week? Sweet, let's just stack that game. And in theory, that's the right process. But if everyone is doing that, there's no differentiation. So, you know, week one, it's the Chiefs and Cardinals that has the highest total as the early look-ahead lines have been put out by Vegas. Like, it's already going to be super popular. There's players there that people love. Travis Kelce, you know, people are in on Juju and Sky Moore. Of course, Pat Mahomes on the other side. Like, people love Kyler. Marquise Brown's been popular. Like, there's a lot of reasons to get excited about that game. But if it fails and you don't play it and you go somewhere else, like, you don't even have to have the perfect lineup. If you just don't play the game that is a stinker, you can really, you know, get a leg up on your competition. So I think finding those secondary game stacks is what we would call them, are really valuable.
There was a game that I really like the total of it, but I'm really worried that I think it's going to become really popular. So the total is only 46.5. It's your Eagles at the Lions.
I knew it. I knew you were going to say it.
It's it's a game that I really want to stack because I've talked about DJ Chark a lot. We love Jalen Hurts. There's lots of different ways you could go there. Kenneth Gainwell, AJ Brown's probably going to be super popular. There's so many different routes to that game. And yet because of Hard Knocks and because of the fact that people like the Eagles these days, I feel like it's going to be a popular game.
These are two pretty popular teams in the betting market too. Like Eagles got steamed up. People love the Lions this year. So I think I cracked the code, Kyle. Here's what we're going to do. Okay. Jalen Hurts, skinny stack because he's going to run. Jalen Reagor, no one's going to play him.
That's true.
And your boy DJ Chark. And we can play this game. How about that?
I don't hate it. I just
don't play Jalen Reagor, people.
You hate
the Lions.
I hate both of these teams because they're popular. And I've said before on this podcast, when people go one way, there's just something in me that says, like, I can't do that. So I could get buried, but we'll talk more when we get closer about what we think the roster percentage are. I noticed that it meets our threshold. Lower total game that's in a dome that has, you know, teams and pieces we like, but I think it's going to be more and more popular. Any other games that stand out to you on there? I mean, I love Packers and Vikings. I love those two teams. I love stacking those two teams in best ball. They play week one and they play in week 17. So start your year in a bang with those two teams in the year, winning a best ball tournament with them. I will be playing Packers and Vikings.
You committed to it already. I like it. Yeah, I mean, I don't have the totals up in front of me, but just kind of looking at the slate, like you can kind of get a feel for some games that might have a higher total and ones that are kind of in that middle zone. And I think one that might go overlooked a little bit is like maybe Jacksonville, Washington is kind of a little sneaky mini correlation. Like you could pair up some wide receivers there, Christian Kirk or whoever you like. And, you know, Terry on the other side or John Dotson or something like that is something I think the field is probably not going to do with that game. It's two quote unquote bad teams. At least that's what they were last year. But, you know, they're definitely not perfect teams. And so you can kind of get into this like bad team shootout back and forth. So that's one that I think is kind of interesting, you know, obviously weeks away and that'll change. But yeah, don't be afraid to go for those second tier games is kind of the take home point here.
I'll give you two other games that I just think are interesting. Patriots and Dolphins, another one of those week one and week 17 games that you get to think about. The Dolphins have so many unknowns of how the offense will actually play out. So I like embracing that relative like unknown world of like Chase Edmonds, Tyreek Hill, and Jalen Waddle. Like I don't know how it's going to play out, but I want to take stabs at that. We know the Patriots are a good defense, and I believe these two teams played last year in week one. The Dolphins won, and then they lost like seven straight. So there's a lot of narratives at play here, I think, with those two. So I want to embrace that. And then I just want to throw out the Saints and the Falcons. Falcons are going to lose. They're at home. It's fine. But I don't know what to do with the passing options for both of those teams, right? Like Michael Thomas, I love Chris Olave, Jarvis Landry. And the same thing with Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Like, we don't know how those target shares will fully play out. And I'd rather get on board with that from week one and just roll the dice and saying that there could be a little bit of a back and forth of, you know, Drake. Let's say you play Drake London and Alvin Kamara, or you play Chris Olave and Pitts. Who knows? Like, you could have a good little mini correlation there as well. So, any last thoughts?
That's interesting, too. Nothing else in terms of the value stacks, but that's the take-home point is we want to be finding those value stacks. The last point for large field strategies, I think, is just not enough double stacking from the field. So, we obviously know we want to be stacking a quarterback with a pass catcher, but looking at, like, the Millie Maker trends over the last couple of seasons that used a quarterback and two of their teammates, so it could be a wide receiver and another wide receiver, it could be a wide receiver and a tight end. But basically, in those lineups, the top 10 lineups, 40-ish percent of the time, based off the year that you look at, they're doing that. So the high-end outcomes happen when you double stack, but the field is doing it just under 30% of the time. So that's an easy way to create leverage and know that you're increasing your expected return if you do that. So in large field strategies, I will be trying to set rules, I think, this year in the right situation with the right quarterbacks, meaning their pocket passers, to double stack my quarterbacks for sure.
I usually, for a tournament, let's say I'm putting in, I'm max entering, or let's say I'm just putting in 20 max. That's easier for people to kind of comprehend than 100. I will pick three quarterbacks and just say, these are the three quarterbacks that I'm using either for leverage, one that I think is just an awesome play, and then another one that I think, like, hey, I think he might go under rostered, or their stacks will. And it really comes down to when you talk about double stacking, it's stacking and then mixing who those players are. So you're not going to know every single time, like, this is the optimal play. You're trying to figure out the different combinations, and you don't even have to be certain, like, high on a player. I remember a couple years ago when your boy Sammy Watkins went off for 3 touchdowns.
He's going to do it again this year in week one. Watch
out. I love Sammy Watkins. I always will love Sammy Watkins as a player. But I remember hearing this story from the person that won the Millie Maker last year. They're like, wow, how are you on Sammy Watkins? The rest of the field wasn't. And he said, I wasn't on him at all, but I was just mixing him in my lineups because I love the quarterback, and you're able to do that. So realize it doesn't mean you have to be on this player as a whole, but if you're on their quarterback or you're on the offense, like, be able just to stack and mix, like, be able to figure out which player. So if you think the Saints are going to go off for 5 touchdowns again and you have Jameis Winston, maybe it's Jarvis Landry's the one that catches 2 touchdowns. Maybe it's Chris Olave. You're just stacking and you're mixing, but you're figuring out how to double stack to get different from the field. So hopefully, if you're out there, you're alive, and you enjoyed what we got to talk about with GPPs. We'll be putting out more articles. We'll be talking about roster percentages next week, which is one of my favorite topics. I will even next week get to break out some games to for the listeners. I'm going to get them to participate along with bets. But any last words for the faithful folk?
I don't think I have anything else other than have a great week, and let's go win some GPPs this year. And hey, I mean, if you're playing some preseason DFS, which I will be, find me in Discord. Let's talk some strategy. We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fantasy Footballers DFS Podcast. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.thefantasyfootballers.com.